Peter, thanks for joining us. I still work in sales, and one of the first things a guy said to me in sales, the most depressing day of a sales, working in a sales environment, is the first day after your best month ever, because you wipe it all clean and everybody starts talking about the future. So it must be like that as the chief executive of Celtic. We've just won a double treble, and the first thing that fans are talking about now this week is, how are we going to make the team even better for next season?
Yeah. No, you're spot on. You get 5 minutes, literally 5 minutes, to enjoy it, and this is a relentless business, and the demands are such from supporters, from all the other stakeholders, that we need to just continue. You get 5 minutes to enjoy it, and in fact you never really switch off. You're always thinking ahead, and we're thinking 1 year, 2 years, 3 years ahead at any given time. But Saturday was very, very special. We did give ourselves a wee bit of time to enjoy it, but you're right, we go on to the next stage. And that's where we are. So the cycle changes. We go into a new transfer window. We clearly have the target or objective to come out stronger than when we go in. And that will be the same this year. We have a number of positions that Brendan would like to strengthen in. We're working in those at the moment. And of course, there's probably going to be some players that will leave the club at this stage. So it never ends, but that's part of the territory. That's part of the thrill of the job. And we're looking forward to going forward and making Celtic better.
Could you talk us a wee bit around a transfer window for a minute? Just the sort of, because all we know as fans is we talk about a player, then we sign a player, lots of money. I was involved once in a big venture capital transaction, and we spent 10 days just arguing over one word in the contract. So I'm always amazed that a football contract seems to be done and dusted for multi-millions of pounds in a day. So what sort of work gets involved in the club in the transfer window?
Well, it goes way back. So if we have a squad planning meetings regularly with Brendan and Lee Congerton in terms of recruitment, and we understand the needs and wants of the manager in terms of people who he may want to move on, and the positions and individuals that he wants to bring in to make the club better, the team better. We then, through Lee would go out continually, again it's relentless, looking at options for these positions, and we put together a proposal, a proposition that would go to Brendan and the coaches. So on a technical basis they'll say yes or no, and those that are said yes to come to me then in terms of the understanding what it would take to either move a player on or to bring a player in. So at that point you've done your degree of your due diligence, so you understand the outline of a potential transaction, and then you go to the market. Clearly if there is if it's a free transfer, then there's only two parties involved. It gets far more complicated if it's a transfer and there are three parties involved. So you then make contact with the club, and sometimes it is a day that it takes if things are well, but the majority of times it takes longer. And of course with transfer windows you'll see that most of the business is done towards the end of the window, where people wait, players wait to understand the options they have, clubs wait to understand the options they have in terms of buyers. And therefore, although it seems that it's a reactive period and it's all done in the last week, a lot of planning is into it, both technically, financially, and commercially over a long period of time. And then you have your options, you have a list. If you don't get number one, you move on to number two and work your way down.
And then you talk to number three and number one comes back.
And number one, but that sometimes happens. And then, it's human beings. The other thing, it's sometimes from outside looking in, there's no other business that I've been involved in. People say there are people businesses. There is no other business like this in terms of the emotion. It's almost entirely a people business. You have artists, you have football people, you have performers, you have agents, and you have football clubs, you know, who are directed in many ways, and huge interest, if you like, from the supporter base. So it's so you have supporters, people, you have artists, you have performers. It's a hugely dominated by people. And then, of course, people change their mind. People have different moods. They have different opportunities. And it's very difficult to work your way through that at times.
Peter, we're coming off, or we're in the midst of a
sustained period of success, I guess, on and off the field. But the risk of that when you're in a point where you're doing really well and everything's going well is that at some point the law of diminishing returns can kick in and you start to hit the ceiling. How do you see Celtic maximising our potential, I guess, within the current structures that we're in and potentially in the future, how things might shape out here?
No, that's a very good point. I mean, inevitably you wouldn't be able to keep winning forever, you know, and each time you win actually adds another different type of pressure. For us, you know, I guess we stick to the plan. Over the last 10-15 years, where we have been, we've taken a long-term view. We haven't reacted to short-term pressures, maybe from a few bad results, a bad season, media, social media criticism. We've felt that you have to keep the blinkers on, you have to look for the long-term and do the right thing. And if you react to short-term pressures, then you're dead. So I think we continue to do that. We've got a core business there that I think's worked well, which is you know, the investment of intellectual capital. Like, where financial capital is limited, we need to be cleverer, better, on the edge, and get a competitive advantage, which means the best coaches, the best sports scientists, the best academy, the best recruitment. So we create in here, these are the mantras: create, build, add value, where we, for example, we'll bring an undervalued player in, coach him, develop him, make him better, put him on the stage at Celtic Park, hopefully put him in the Champions League, and then if he stays and plays in the Champions League, fantastic. But if the player wants to move on, we transfer him to England and then reinvest the money back in the club. That strategy has you know, resulted in us dominating in Scotland, playing in the Champions League regularly. I think the next challenge is to get out the group stage if we possibly can, and make sure that we get better. And that's what their total focus at the club. Everybody's focus is no complacency, focus, get better, and keep improving and keep developing the club.
Okay. So that's very much how we progress within current structures. How do you see things opening up, or do you see things opening up in the future for Celtic around Scottish football, European football? I know you've talked before around changes are coming, so have you got any views on what that might look like?
Yeah, well, at the moment, I think unless there's something from left field, then it looks like the Champions League will, the format and access will stay the same for the next 6 years. So it's this cycle and the next cycle. The Europa League will stay the same for this cycle, 18 to 21, but there is an opportunity from 21 to 24 to change. And we're discussing that. I'm part of the working group at UEFA at the moment, so we're discussing what would be the best format, access and financing of the Europa League for 21 to 24. And that, I think, should be built around expectations for 24 onwards. So I think from 24 onwards, we'll see quite significant change in European football. And the dynamics at the moment are, you have the elite clubs, if you like, and we've now seen the suggestion of this Club World Cup, the elite clubs having pressure to possibly maximise their value by moving away into whether it's a breakaway or an elite league. And the conflicting dynamic being Alexander Seferin, who's the president of UEFA, saying we need to look at competitive balance. So over the next 6 years, these will be the conflicting dynamics, and that will be the discussion, the debate of what 24 onwards looks like. For us as Celtic, we need to stay relevant. There are huge challenges. I mean, the gap is getting bigger between the elite clubs, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Man United, Bayern Munich, and the rest. Our challenge over that 6 year period is to remain relevant. We are regarded, no matter where we go, as a top class European football club. We have a lot of supporters at high level, and people respect Celtic. So hopefully from what we've done in the past and what we'll continue to do, we'll remain relevant, we'll remain part of it, and our job is to try and influence probably post-24 onwards to the extent that we can, but be as big a part of it for the longer term.
Okay. I guess the last question I've got in eye there, Pierre. In terms of the domestic situation, you've talked in the past about the aspirations for Scottish football generally, if other clubs could get themselves in that position that Celtic are in around trying to compete in Europe and trying to kind of really make progress in that.
Is there a risk on the downside of that, that if clubs try that and it doesn't happen, that they look at Celtic and think, well, they're dominating domestically, what's the alternative? Let's bring them back closer to us and look at things like league reconstruction, that kind of thing.
I don't know how big a risk that is, but the consequences of that would be disastrous for Scottish football. We should be looking at supporting our bigger clubs, supporting our clubs in Europe, and exporting Scottish football. So whatever we do in Europe, or whatever any club participating in Europe, it brings back coefficient points, it brings back revenue, significant revenue for the league. So I think that would be a huge mistake, and I don't think it will happen. I think people are smart enough to realise the consequences of, if you like, dumbing down the big clubs, and therefore it won't. In terms of, I mean, my view on competitive balance, if you like, in Europe and Scotland, is about access and inclusion. So negative steps like, you know, squad caps, salary caps, you know, these to me are negative and actually harm the development of football. It should be all about inclusion. So, for example, if we can expand the Europa League for 21 to 24, maybe from 48 to 64 teams, and get the access right, then that might mean teams like Aberdeen, Hearts and Hibs have a better chance of entering the Europa League group stages, therefore gaining transforming finance, and therefore improving their competitiveness back here in Scotland. So rather than having negative influences, I think we should be looking at far more positive and looking at ways of inclusion and access for clubs from medium to small size nations. And that for me would be the transformer for Scottish football, get more clubs in Europe. And ultimately, if we can contract the domestic league and expand participation in Europe for our clubs, I think that would be a huge positive step forward. But we're not alone, you know, that we are, as a nation, we stand alongside Holland, Belgium, Denmark, you know, Poland is another good example, 45 million people. And I think we need to be innovative, we need to be open, and you know, hopefully get the right compromise and balance for 24 onwards.
I mean, your point there, we've got Aberdeen, Hibs and Hearts averaging about 15,000 this season, which is on a par with Austria and the bulk of Belgium and Holland. So virtually all my, virtually since the post-Fergus era, we've been talking about a change in dynamic in world and European football. Is it much more likely now?
I think it is. I think the nature, we're now, football has become a global entertainment business, and everybody's talking about that for years and years, but I think eventually it's here. And the interest from new entrants, if you like, you're seeing now from the Far East, from Asia, the interest in football, from the Middle East, Qatar, Abu Dhabi, and now the suggestion that Saudi Arabia are prepared to fund global developments in football. So that whole dynamic has changed, and what does that mean? Well, that gives stress, it gives pressure, because there are, as I said earlier, there are two levels of the elite, and then there's the rest. So I think it is much more likely. Clubs are now under new ownership. I think there's two or three things. One, more money in football. There's a lot of smart people coming into football in terms of ownership and executive around the world, probably attracted with the football. And thirdly, strategy. So if you take Paris Saint-Germain, for example, who Nasser is the president of Paris Saint-Germain, owned by the Qataris. He sits on the board. He's the president of BN Sports, who are the Middle Eastern broadcaster. He also sits on the board of Miramax, the film production company in the States that the Qataris have a stake in. And he has Neymar, who has 85 million social media followers. So his strategy is, he sees it not literally, but he says Paris Saint, for that group, as a global entertainment company. He sees it as a movie, not literally, but as a movie. And that is a strategy that is different from whatever been before in football clubs. So that's going to move off. That's the way that you see the development of the game. Manchester City, again, Abu Dhabi, and they're doing it differently. They're acquiring clubs around the world in order to boost their global presence. So there is a lot of change, there's a lot of interest, a lot of money coming into the game. And as I said earlier, we just need to make sure that that we continue to be relevant in that environment and influence and take a part when the change comes.
And one way around that is to help develop the brand of Scottish football.
Mm-hmm.
Are you able to tell us any more about what's happening with the TV deal in Scotland?
Well, not really. I'm not particularly close to it. It's 2020 is the contract's up, and I believe negotiations are beginning to start at the moment. Again, it's a difficult one. It's a challenge. You know, there's only been really two runners in the past two or three contracts. A contract is only worth what somebody will pay for it. I think that the Scottish game at the moment is clearly in the up. There is a higher profile. There's more interest. I think the quality is greater. And therefore, there should be higher demand. But we'll have to wait and see who is interested and who throws their hat in the ring.
So you talked about, I mean, everything we talked about so far is about money.
Mm.
So how robust are we if we didn't have a Champions League qualification? What's our financial position?
No, I don't think we've ever been stronger. And as I said earlier, we're looking, at the moment, I'm looking 2-3 years out. Just understanding where we can be, where we want to be. We've got resource that will be that'll enable us to have a long runway in terms of any things that don't go to plan or don't go to wrong. We do plan for the unexpected, so I think we're very robust. We have good resource at the moment. We've got pretty ambitious plans with regard to the football team and also for the infrastructure around Celtic Park, and we're pretty confident of delivering that.
Can you talk a little bit more about the infrastructure stuff, Peter? I know there's yeah. You know, as we look at the window, there's tractors flying back and forth to the pitch, but there's been a lot of publicity around things like the hotel and what's happening inside the stadium over the summer there, and I guess what's the timing looking like around some of that stuff? How do we plan to fund that, and do we need a deck of cards to get some of that done?
No, we all these projects, and we'll come on to them in terms of detail, but all these projects are extremely important to ensure that we keep taking the club forward and keep getting better. A lot of them will be legacy projects, so at the end of the day, they'll be for our children and our children's children going forward. So we always look to the future in terms of the outlook for Celtic the legacy that we all leave as custodians of the club. But in the short term, we're spending nearly £5 million in projects around the stadium. We're putting in the new floodlights, the new lighting system, which is part of the entertainment system, new sound, new pitch. We're putting a new roof on the south stand, and we're putting on with new gable end infrastructure projects at both the east and west side. So those are going to be completed over the summer. We can continue to invest in the stadium to hopefully give our supporters the best match day experience. With regard to the master plan, we are currently assessing options. We have the master plan includes the hotel, a new museum, superstore, and new ticket office. So at the moment, we've gone out to market. It's very early on. We've got expressions of interest, and we're looking at assessing what would be the best for Celtic, the best structure, then looking at the financing. And hopefully there'll be a positive outcome at that at the moment. So we're going through a process. Over and above that, again, looking to the future, we're looking at our training facilities at Lennoxtown and Barrowfield and what would fit best for a modern professional football club, developing players and developing kids. So we're always looking to the future. We're always looking to develop. We're always looking to get better. Clearly, it's a question of choices. Where do you put your resources in the first team or into infrastructure projects? But I think to date we've got that balance right, and I'm sure we'll continue to do that.
So it must be quite a tricky balance as chief executive, deciding what goes where and when.
Mm.
How do you make those choices about what's capital expenditure on the stadium, what's capital expenditure on the team, what's revenue on players' wages?
Yeah. Well, again, it's just that's a big part of the job. It's all about balance. It's all about compromise here and there. And but if you plan ahead, if you know the direction you want to go on, if you're successful and therefore bring in the resource, it's not too difficult.
So as part of that infrastructure planning, we need to the Glasgow City Council to work with us to get things like the fan zone. So the fan zone was in place for the Brown test, the Scott Brown testimonial. Yeah. What are the chances of that type of thing continuing?
Well, it was great success on Sunday. You know, it was for us the first licensed fan zone. It was an overwhelming success, and clearly we'd like to do it again. One of the frustrations here in my job is that we've been pretty progressive over the last few years in terms of wanting to update the stadium, wanting to try new ideas, wanting to give our supporters a better match day experience. And it's taken a long time. And at times, you know, you see this car parking exclusion zone coming in, which we understand that we've got supporters and we've got a community around the stadium. And we will be, the way to address that is that we should be and will be good neighbours. But to have the draconian decision to take, put in a 1 mile, is it 1 kilometre?
1 kilometre
parking zone, particularly with no enhancement to public transport, we bitterly oppose that. And things like that would lead you to think that the contribution that we make to Glasgow, economically, socially, culturally, to Scotland, to the East End, to Glasgow, to Scotland, is probably not... It doesn't seem valued. So what we've done is we have started a economic impact study for Celtic and how we affect Glasgow, East End of Glasgow, Glasgow and Scotland, economically, socially and culturally. And then we can hopefully enlighten those that probably are unaware and don't recognise what Celtic do. And therefore, it might make it a little easier to form partnerships to progress and improve Celtic Park, its environment for everybody.
Do you think that's part of the barrier? My perception as a Celtic fan is that football is a pain in the arse.
Mm-hmm.
That's the sort of authority's attitude to
it. Well, I can understand you having that view and that opinion because very rarely do you get anything positive coming out from the authorities in terms of football. If you look at Holyrood, then it's Offensive Behaviour Act, it's strict liability, and no real public recognition of what Celtic does and what football does for Scotland, and that is a frustration. And we hopefully by producing this piece of academic work that people in the authority do understand what Celtic and therefore football contribute to the nation and the city, and we get recognised for that. And the purpose of that would be that we could work together in improving things.
Has anybody from the council proactively spoken to Celtic about this 1 kilometre parking exclusion?
We have had discussions, but I'm afraid to date they've fallen in deaf ears, and we will continue to have discussion on it and try and find a solution that would hopefully satisfy the community around the stadium, our neighbours and our supporters, whether that through public transport or more parking facilities or actually reducing the zone. But you can understand that this is a significant change in terms of how our supporters can travel to the match. And for us at the moment, it's unacceptable.
Peter, within Scottish football, there's been a number of changes, individuals, yourself included, in terms of the makeup of the governance bodies and the committees, etc. that are around that. We've got a new chief executive coming into the SFA this week. How do you see Scottish football governance unfolding? You've talked in the past about the changes that need to happen there.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, I guess the concern of a lot of supporters is it's window dressing, lipstick and a pig stuff that's going on just now. There's not really fundamental change being taken seriously because it's still the same old characters that have been there for a reasonable amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that changing? Do you see that unfolding in a positive sense for Scottish football?
Yeah, probably more positive now than I have been. I think the appointment of Ian Maxwell was an excellent appointment. He is an intelligent guy, he's an ambitious guy, and he knows football. And he's a club man. I think his first impact will be is maybe rebuilding relations between the Football Association and the leagues and the club. I think what we need to establish here is what is the actual purpose of the SFA and what is the purpose of the leagues. For me, the clubs and therefore the leagues create the wealth in Scottish football, and therefore should be again recognised for doing that and giving the adequate input and influence in the running of the game because of that. The Scottish FA for me probably should be the regulator, should be the governing body, should look after the national team, should look after the schools and grassroots football, the Scottish Cup, but probably that would be it. So it's probably a much downsized organisation, a more focused organisation, and the rest should fall in the leagues and the clubs. Now that's my opinion. I don't know what Ian Maxwell's opinion is, but that would be the way I'd like to see things progress.
Paul's talked about the governance and we just had a conversation about it. Well, Celtic consulted about the Scotland games in South America in the next couple of weeks.
No, but the first we heard was when we read it in the newspaper that this tour had been organised. So that was real frustration for us, and we made our thoughts known to the SFA.
Because it doesn't. I mean, you've talked about the infrastructure. We could walk 5-6 weeks to do all the things that you've just described. And I understand that this tour or these games were only picked because Michael O'Neill wanted them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. Not so sure, I don't know.
Do you think the SFA should have more consultation with... We've got 5-6 players
There's no doubt. I think to build relations going forward with clubs, then that is communication, engagement is just, you know, absolutely essential. And hopefully now with Ian in there, he understands that, and that will be a big improvement going forward.
Within the club and the playing side, Peter, there's been a lot of evidence of continuity coming in over the last couple of years. So we've seen guys like Stevie Woods, John Kennedy, that have stayed on the first team coaching staff under a succession of managers now and provided that continuity. We're seeing and hearing about the way that the teams are playing from young age group level through to first team, are following a philosophy and a way of playing. Now clearly Brendan's had a big impact to that in the last couple of years since he's been here, and he has talked publicly about his desire to stay for a number of years, and you know, we've no reason to question that at all. But is that sort of level of succession planning something that you see important to us going forward, not only in terms of the way that the club's planning the infrastructure through, but I guess in terms of personnel, are we starting to think about what that looks like over the next few years?
Absolutely. Stability is paramount in football. You know, you can see that where clubs are reactive in short term, but we've had a stability through our ownership, through our board, through our management, that has really stood us in great stead over the years, and that's something that we look forward to. It's about, I mean, the way we look at it, it's long term. We always take a long term view. We look at succession planning, we look at the infrastructure, we look at the team. And we look at outside influences like Europe that will either impact positively or negative at Celtic. So we have a long-term view, stability is vital, and all of these things are part of the plan.
Is there anything that keeps you awake at night, football-wise? Or business-wise, that we should be worrying about?
No, at the moment, again, you can never be complacent. Things change very, very quickly in football. And realising that, make sure that you never have a 8 hour sleep at night anyway, so you're constantly awake at night anyway. So I think the very fact that I've been around football long enough, I know how volatile it can be. I've got a real desire and passion to take this club as far as it possibly can and improve it as much as it can, but knowing the vagaries of football, that's enough to keep you awake at night at times.
So in terms of that continuity planning, how much thought do you then need to give into how the football structure and the football side is set up over the next few years? Do you need to, without getting into great detail, people talk about whether how long Brendan's going to be here. Do you need to think about, well, one day I'll not be without Brendan and always have that?
You do, of course. That's part of your succession planning. Now, Brendan is an outstanding manager. He's done an outstanding job here. We are pretty close, and genuinely, he's never been happier in a job. He's never been happier, I don't think, in his professional life outside the job. In terms of Glasgow, he's extremely happy, and I think we're as secure as we possibly can be, being Celtic, having such an outstanding manager here. So he enjoys it. There's no sign of him wanting to move on. But inevitably, through time, there will come a time when he'll probably want to. But I don't know when that will be. We hope it's going to be in many, many years. But we've got to plan for that and understand what the next step would be.
And on the football side of things, in that continuity, we seem to have a luxury that other clubs don't have. We seem to be able to build for stuff.
Mm.
But how do we build for, you talked about the gap between we've got to compete in the Champions League level. If the elite are getting further away, how do we do that? How do we compete at Champions League level?
Well, financially, we're at such a disadvantage. We have to be, as you say, this, we have to be cleverer. We have to be on the edge. The best coaches, the best sports scientists, create Champions League players and basically punch above our weight in a financial sense. And that's the core part of the business, and that's what we've got a track record of doing, I believe, and been successful in, and we'll continue to try and get better.
In terms of the sort of wider view of Scottish football, Peter, you've talked in very positive terms about where Scottish football can go over the next few years. Without getting into detail around the media, how do you see Celtic being able to further influence and progress the positive side of that? At the moment, kind of the general perception is that we talk ourselves down quite a lot mm-hmm. in Scotland, and I think what we've talked about in the last hour or so has largely been about how we should be kind of striving and aspiring as a nation mm-hmm. to up that. So where do you see Celtic sort of driving that, sort of media wise and PR wise, I guess?
PR and media wise is, I think you need to have substance, and the PR and media will follow. It's very, very short term if you build a strategy on PR and media, and we've seen that elsewhere, if there's no substance to it. So you really need substance, and the substance for me will come from performance, success, clubs doing the right thing, clubs growing and clubs participating in European football, and that's the way it'll happen. I think if you can get to a level and you export Scottish football into European context, you have more meaningful games, you have better competition, you have more interest for the supporters, sponsors, broadcasters, and then the PR and media will follow that, you know.
So does that, I guess, follow up to that, and do we think more, or should we be thinking more about who we partner with and who, you know, in terms of that global view at the moment? I know you can't talk too much about the TV deal because you're not close to negotiating it, but that's a good example for us when you look at the slightly parochial coverage of Scottish football generally, and then you look at how other leagues are being marketed, and you think, well, actually, would that help close some of that gap if we were marketing ourselves in a bit more a positive sense?
Aye, I think if there's probably room for improvement in doing that, but I think it comes down to success and the quality of the product. There is one point that where, you know, again, it goes back to partnership, and if we could find a broadcaster who believed in the game and believed the game can improve and can develop, and they come in as a partner and rather than just a supplier or a broadcaster and work with us to make the game better, then that would be far, and if again for the long term, that would be far better than just maybe choosing somebody for the short term who doesn't have a partnership approach because there's a few more quid in it.
So where do you see, because if we partner up, how long is the next TV deal going to be in domestic?
It's till 2020.
2020, so where do you see us, Celtic, being? What's this environment going to look like, plain terms and infrastructure terms, in 2020, in 2025, and in 2030, you know, in sort of 3, 5, and 10 years' time? Where do you see us being, and what will it look like?
Well, hopefully, you know the plans, so hopefully by 2025, hopefully sooner, we'll have a Celtic Park that will stand out as a top-class European football club destination. Which will have its own hotel, own museum, a lot of attractions that will be non-match day. It will have a top-class European stadium that will entertain and be something that our supporters can be proud of. In terms of the European structure, I would think that, as I said, in the next 6 years there will be big change. My view is there will be big change after the next 6 years. I feel that what we're doing at the moment in terms of being involved in the processes at UEFA, at FIFA, ECA, the performances we have in terms of on the pitch, our continued participation in the Champions League, my hope would be that we would be, say, an influencer and part of that change and be relevant for that change, which could be extremely exciting. And as I said, it's going to be, you know, we need to look at football now with the new entrants, with the way the big clubs are looking at it as a global entertainment business.
If football became that global entertainment business, and you talk about the Europa League going to 64 teams and then who knows in 6 years' time, would we always be playing in Scotland, do you think, in that vision, in 10 years' time?
Again, you know, if there is a European concept that allows us to play more football in Europe and more Scottish clubs to play more football in Europe, I think that would be extremely positive. So again, I wouldn't say no, but we have to see how the next few years develop.
Is there a single moment you look back on your time here and think that was the one that was a highlight for me, or is that still to come?
We can put this in the obituary bit when you.
Aye, obituary. It's a great question. There's been so many, I think. But I think you have to isolate the present. You know, I think at the moment we're in a really, really good place, generally, you know, in a football sense. The club, in terms of its resources, its balance sheet, our supporters are happy, making millions of people around the world so happy on Saturday. Watching the bus parade, so it's all of that. And then in the last few games, just really realising that this is, you know, a club for the future. You know, we have a future, we have a very positive future, we'll continue to get better. Watching the amount of families that are coming to that came to the Aberdeen game, we're here on Saturday, we're here for Scott Brown's game on Sunday, that's our future. And one of the big pleasing factors is the amount of families and young kids that are now coming to the games.
Well, that's actually something. Is that the challenge of a season book culture? How do you change the? Because if you get, you know, I've sat in the same seat for 25 years. I've been a season book holder for like longer than that. How do you get people in if you've sold out? And you have a waiting list for season books. How do you change and bring down the age?
You know, that's a good point. We will sell out, and we do have a big waiting list. But that's where the match day tickets comes in. I don't think we'd ever go beyond a particular level. We need to keep a high degree of match day tickets available for people to come and see what we have here. And then, of course, promote the club out with match days.
So you talked about families. How do you get more women in?
Well, again, it's the match day experience. It's making sure that it is for families. It is, you know, a whole day experience that we can take them away from other competing interests that they have. Get them engaged in the club, what we do as an institution, what we do in a football sense, what we do commercially, what we do for a foundation, and asking people to buy into Celtic in its broader sense.
I've noticed the women's captains being involved in the kit launches we've done the last couple of years. Is that getting women's team more?
Aye, we're investing in the women's team. We'd like to do more, and that's something that we're looking at.
Do you ever see a day that they play a game?
They've played here before, yeah.
With crowds?
Aye. Again, it depends how, I mean, it's very, it's in its infancy, really, women's football in Scotland, and we'd like to think that would happen, that the game in Scotland would develop to that extent.
Last question about you as a fan. I was fortunate enough to not sit that far from you at the weekend. And the one thing that struck me was I turned round after a goal, because I've always wanted to know. You were all having to sit down. Do you ever miss being able to jump around?
There are times we have been doing that. No,
I know it's the etiquette.
It's the etiquette. No, but I think you have to you know, there's certain behaviour aspects that are expected when you're in the royal box that you have to adhere to. But listen, it's inside, you know, when Celtic score. There's nothing better than Celtic scoring a fantastic goal.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.